But first this morning, and bear with me because I'm quite hoarse, Gary Brown grew up in Cabra in Dublin. The son of a docker, he went on to forge a great career in advertising and he won a Lifetime Achievement Award for his work. He serves on the board of Bord Bia. He's a former chairman of Shelburne Football Club, but Gary never forgot the early years of his life, meeting the men who worked on the docks and hearing their stories. Along with his great pal, Damien Dempsey, Gary has written a play called Dockers, starring George Murphy and Tara Howley. And he's here with me in studio today, along with his big shovel. Good morning, Gary Brown. Okay, first
morning,
of all,
Miriam.
Tell me about this ginormous shovel.
Well, thanks for having both of us. Yeah, this thing has a life of its own personality. Yeah, this is a number 7 shovel. And it could take 4 stone of coal in one lift. So you can imagine it's really heavy enough, but imagine having 4 stone of coal on that and being bent down in a coal hole of a ship, shoveling coal all day, shoveling coal to the Angelus Bell, getting in practice ready for hell. That's what they were doing. So
such hard work, really, when you think about it. Your dad.
Yeah, amazing. It was hard and dangerous, and there was no health and safety back then as well. So there were lots of work accidents on the docks. Some men were maimed. And then what happened was their wives or girlfriends or whatever became carers for them. And in the case of my own father, unfortunately, he was killed on the docks in an accident. And in fact, ambulances used to go up and down the docks so often, they became known as the Docker's Taxi. So that was the frequency of working accidents, you know.
Your dad was only 34.
Yeah.
Isn't that correct?
Yeah, he was 34.
Tell me about your family, first of all. I mean, you remember moving out to Cabra first. Tell me where you grew up originally.
Yeah, well, originally we were from the tenements in Church Street. And the tenements began to fall down. And our side of the street were moved to Cabra or Finglas. And the other side of the street were moved to Ballyfermot or Crumlin. And I think Joe Duffy's family lived across the road from us. And they were moved to Ballyfermot. But I say we got lucky. We were moved to Cabra. So when we ended up in Cabra, it was great. First of all, my mother didn't like it because it was... It was kind of, she called it, we're out here in these reservations, like an Indian reservation. But very soon she began to like it, and then the communities began to build up, and then she loved Cabra in the end, and it became a great place, as indeed still is a great place to live, you know.
So tell me about your dad. You were 11, were you?
I was 11, yeah, the eldest of 4 children. My youngest brother, Glenn, he was only 3 months old when my father was killed. My father went out to work on the 16th of February 1971. A lot of people might remember that day because it was decimal day. It was the day decimalisation came in. And basically he never came back. He was crushed by crates of wood that collapsed on top of him. And there's a song in the play Dockers called My Liffey Love, which I've written with Damien Dempsey, which is dedicated to my mother. And it's about that day, and it starts off, it's a beautiful song, really beautifully sung by Tara Howley in it, and accompanied by George. But that morning he kissed me and said his goodbye. He went into your bosom amid your soft skies, but you crushed him like cinders and cast him aside. Now the Liffey is all swollen from the tears I have cried. Tell me where, oh where, is my Liffey love? So that was a kind of a dedication to her and that great heartache that she experienced, you know.
It's really beautiful. And your mother, when you think back on women like that, your mother was phenomenal, wasn't she? Left with a three-month-old baby as well.
Yeah, yeah.
4 children, not much money. And she was like 4'11", wasn't she? Some woman.
4'11", but never out of her high heels. She was born in her high heels, and she used them. She used her high heels whenever she could as well, sometimes on me. But anyway, that's another story. But she was a great woman, yeah. And women like that at the time were the backbone of the community. They very often, particularly in docklands related stuff, they held the household together. Sometimes the men would drink their wages. Sometimes they'd gamble. Not all the time, but so the woman had to really be strong. And there were lots of strong docklands women like her. She was a funny woman. She was a witty woman. She was a tough woman. She was a great woman for mixing words up and malapropism. Sometimes she didn't even realise she was doing it. For example, she would say, "Your woman down the road's had to get into Georgina Windus," being the Georgian Windus. Or she'd say things like, "Oh, the Portugal television." She called it the Portugal television. And she would never went to the ILAC Centre. It was always the Lilac Centre. She went to the Lilac
Centre. It's a nice name.
One particular one I always remember, she told me one day, "Your sister's at the pipes are at the leak, and the whole of the fertility room is destroyed." But that was an interesting, that malapropism was, it's very Dublin thing. And in fact, the origin of it, Mrs. Malaprop, is a character from Richard Brinley Sheridan's comedy drama, which was called The Rivals. And he was actually from Dorset Street. So I believe Sheridan, when he was a young man around, walking around the streets of Dublin, picked up on these nuances that people get words mixed up. And it's very funny. And it makes, even in the play, we have Nora, who she says, you think we're all down here, like you think we're all a load of kleptomechanics, you know. And but it's a part of Dublin life that's really funny.
What impact, when you look back now, do you think the death of your dad had when you were 11?
I think it probably made me more independent as well, and neither had to kind of look out for myself. But you know, it probably gave me a chip on both shoulders, which is a good thing. And one of the issues that I have, and we all have these little kind of skeletons, little compartments, is that no matter what I achieve, it always seems like an anticlimax because the fellow I wanted to see wasn't around for it. And I think a lot of people experience that when they lose someone quite young, someone who was influential on their life. And he used to tell me that, you know, my father used to say to me, you're going to do your Leaving Cert. You're going to be the first Brown ever to do their Leaving Cert. And I managed to kind of do that because I always remember that voice in my head, you know.
That's so lovely. You're a very good footballer too. Tell us about your days in Shelburne.
Well, I grew up in Cabra, and I would tell you I was one of the worst footballers ever to come from Cabra. But I managed to get a decent. I managed to play for Shelburne briefly and badly, and I played for St. Pat's and Longford Town briefly and badly. But that led me then to have great interest in football, and I then became chairman later on, and that was great. We managed to win the double in 1999, 2000, and had some good success in Europe. So, but the football career was great. But I realised very early on in my football career that I wasn't going to be good enough to make a career out of it. Okay. So I went back and did a degree in marketing at night.
And you started with accounting, did you? And then you went and did advertising.
Yeah, I studied accounting for 2 years, but didn't really like it. Didn't suit me. And I then decided I was going to do something else. So eventually when I got involved in marketing, I kind of felt that this was my niche, pardon the pun. And I really got into it. And it allowed me to be creative because I could write. I was writing sales and marketing letters for insurance companies and banks at the time. And it piqued my creative interest, really, in marketing, because marketing is about communication. It's about telling a story. It's about when you're writing ads, you're telling a story in 30 seconds sometimes, you know.
And interestingly, you mentioned earlier, like, you did your Leaving Cert for your dad, or you'd liked him to have been at things that he could never be at, of course. Yeah. But you won so many industry awards down the years. But your wife says you're not great at enjoying them, are you? Is that the same reason why?
It's the same reason why, yeah. It's just that it becomes anticlimactic after you win it. And people have often asked me, what's the best award you've ever won? And I always say, the next one. Because it's that sense that you still need to keep proving yourself. It's one of those things I have. Look, I deal with it. It's not a big issue. But I think it's there for a lot of people. I think a lot of people would have that, you know, when they achieve something and they're successful and somebody that they missed in their life or it was a great influence in their life wasn't around, it kind of adds a little bit of an anticlimactic effect to the success, you know.
But does it also drive you to be successful?
It drives you to be, because as I said, what's the most best award you ever won, the next one, it does. It drives you to be successful. I believe it does anyway, yeah.
Now tell me about your writing, which is great. Work plays a part in unlocking your creative side, doesn't it?
Yeah, it did. The work, when you're writing communication messages for various companies or writing ads, or it focuses you in on telling a story briefly, but also trying to get all the messages across as you can. So I wrote my first play at the age of 59. When I decided I was leaving the business, and it was a black comedy, surprise, surprise. And then a year later, I followed that up with another play. So I've now written six plays in total, and they've all been produced. I've been very lucky. This show, Dockers, is a kind of a much more expansive. It's a musical drama about the life of people working on the docks, because I think it's a history it's a story that can be consigned to history. Mm. People forget that Dublin docks in the 60s and the 50s, 60s and 70s, they had over 3,500 men working on them. And also then there were other thousands of other people in ancillary industries like packaging, like transport. And in the space of about 4 or 5 years, with the advent of containerization, all those jobs were lost. But this is a global story, Miriam, which is interesting. Mm. It's not just about Dublin, because the same thing happened in Liverpool, in London, in Cork, in Dundalk, and places like that, where anywhere that was a port. And Dublin, first of all, was a port before it was a city. And people sometimes forget that. We're a port people. And the port, the idea that we're a port people is adds cultural nuances to us as well, because there's always comings and goings and leavings and arrivals and stuff like that, you know. So being a port, I think, has influenced Dublin, and it would be a shame if we were ever to lose that port heritage.
Well, it's great because in Dockers, you're making sure we're not. Tell me about how you met Damien Dempsey, because he's done this with you.
Yeah, well,
your mum was involved.
Yeah, my mum was involved. I'm involved in a pub called Piper's Corner in Marlborough Street, which is a traditional Irish music venue. And Damien would come in there from time to time. My mother would come in on the odd Sunday and sing an old song. And Damien came in, and she loved Damien because Damien's real. He's authentic, and she loves that. And he's very Dublin. And then he started telling me that his mother was from Cabra. So that was. And then he started telling me about his connection with the Docks, because his uncles were Dockers and they rode in St. Patrick's Rowing Club. So I told him I was writing this project, and he said, "Will you send me over some words?" So I did. And then inevitably he started saying, "Do you mind if I put some music to some of this?" And I said, "I'd be honoured." And so I would send Damien over some lines, and he'd come back with a WhatsApp with a song, and that's how it started.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, yeah.
So tell me about the two characters George Murphy and Tara Howley play.
Yeah, George plays Jack O'Dunn. He's a docker, but he knows that the dock work is coming to the end because of containerization. So he starts to write a few songs, and he believes he can put them across quite well. And then Nora is his spiky cousin who kind of slags him a lot, but she can also... played by Tara Howley. And Tara is an amazing musician. She plays like 7 instruments and a beautiful singer as well. She's from Kilfenora in Clare, so we had to work on her Dublin accent, but she's great and she really pulls it off, and she's a brilliant singer. So the two of them kind of spark off one another as they go through telling stories about the docks. I mean, there's a song about the number 7 shovel. It's a real backbreaker in the shape of a heart. It's a money maker getting coal into the cart. Short of strong of handle, stubby but swift, it'll take 4 stone, a coal in one lift. Bending and grinding, breathing in dust, down in the coal hole, sparks against rust. So that's a really good song that's in there as well. But we cover songs about the embargo, things that happened on the docks. Like, people forget, during the War of Independence, the dockers and railway men decided to, they'd have an embargo on British armaments. So no British bullets or munitions were unloaded from the ships. And that really brought the British war effort to a standstill during the War of Independence. Michael Collins commented on it, but it's a little known fact. So we have a song in this about the embargo that I wrote with Damien, yeah.
But of course, some of your writing is very like poetry, and you had written poems when you were very young, hadn't you?
Yeah, I think I wrote my first poem when I was about 7 or 8. I think I vaguely remember it. It was about Dublin. It was I can't remember. But anyway, it was quite a good poem about Dublin, I thought. Yeah, yeah.
And did any teachers spot your talent?
Yeah.
Or did you tell other kids you were writing?
I suppose they did. Well, I was very lucky when I went to Declan's. I had a great English teacher called Mr. Doyle and a great history teacher called Jerry O'Hara. But I suppose creative writing wasn't a done thing back then, because it wasn't seen as being very macho. So you know, you didn't want to be too creative because you might have got picked on on the streets. So you kind of hid that until I got older, I suppose. Yeah.
And of course, football though would be cool for you to do. You've always stayed, as you say, in touch with Shelburne. We spoke earlier, Damon Duff, he's a great guy, isn't he?
Yeah, I only met Damien a couple of times fleetingly, and he's a great guy. He's really humble. He's had a hugely successful career, and to come back and be able to impart that knowledge and experience on young footballers is fantastic. And he still has that great desire and will to win. And he's also, you know, brilliant at taking on people. He's not afraid to take on the FAI, which is brilliant in itself because it needs taking on. And I remember I have another play coming out on the 17th, 18th of May about Ollie Bourne called, it's called Ollie One Man, One Love, One Life. And he was a great man for, as it turns out, Malaprop business. One day I came into the office and he said to me, "I'm after getting a letter here from the FAI, are you with me? I'm surprised any of them can write because they're all illegitimate." So that was, you know, that was not even Shelbourne. Yeah. he wasn't far wrong either, but we won't go into that.
And listen, you also dabbled in the music industry. You managed Jamie and Rice's band Juniper.
Yeah, I seem to have a connection with Damien's for some reason. Yeah, I came across, they were a band called Juniper, and my wife's sister introduced me to them, and they didn't have a manager, and they asked me would I manage them. So I managed Juniper for a couple of years and managed to get them a really significant record deal. And lo and behold, in a true Irish story, just as we were about to go and record the album in a chateau in France with Mike Hedges, the brilliant producer, Damien Rice says, I'm leaving the band. So off he went. We had a split before we even got our first album made. But he went off to have his, in fairness to him, we fell out for a while, but we've since made it up. He went off to have a really successful career. The O album sold 5 or 6 million copies, I think. And a lot of the songs that were that are on the O album were written in the Juniper days. And then the rest of the Juniper boys went on to be Bellex One, a really successful band. They're all great guys and very creative people as well.
It's great, though, because you've done so many different things in your career, don't you? And you stay as busy as ever.
Yeah, I think it's about trying to be relevant. I mean, I'm getting the bus pass next month. So what I'm trying to be is relevant, especially for my younger kids who are 23 and 25 now. And they probably don't remember my career in advertising and marketing. Yeah. So because I was out working too much. So now they're looking at Dad going, yeah, he writes a few plays, so he's not bad. And he knows Damien Dempsey and a few other heads like that. So he's not such a bad elf after all, you know.
And do they follow your career path into advertising, writing?
Yeah, my son works for the Agio in the marketing department. Yeah, Jake. And then my daughter Molly, she works for Dell in the marketing department. And my youngest daughter Ella, she's a piece of work. She's a consultant. She works for Grant Thornton. Yeah,
which is great. Dockers, is it a great joy still to see a play of yours stage? Like when yours, the previews I know are on the 8th, I'll give the dates, but is it still really exciting?
Yeah, it is. It's brilliant because it's very challenging and it's nervous, and it's kind of the next best thing you get to walking out onto a stage yourself is when you see people representing your work singing. And then we have a brilliant director called Joe O'Byrne who has put this whole thing together in a brilliant way, brought out great performances from Tara and George, and some of the songs are written in the play are also with George as well. And it's great to have the whole function of this was to tell a story in an interesting and exciting way, and I think music can do that. Like, you're talking about a shovel here, and it's an inanimate object, but when you sing about it, it brings it to life.
And you know something, we spoke earlier at the beginning about the death of your dad when he was only 34, you were 11. This is a beautiful tribute to him and what he did.
Well, it's a tribute to my father and my mother, yeah, and because it's keeping something alive. I mean, this whole history of the Docklands is fantastic. They had, you know, they had the ways of working, the reed people would have to show up for work. The stevedore would stand up on a plinth and he'd call out people's names. Nicknames are a great thing, by the way, as well. One particular day, this stevedore stood up on a plinth and he called out men, 50 men for a work on a cobalt, and he called them all out by their nicknames. Commando, Half an Apple, Pluto, Brester, the clock, yeah, he had one arm longer than the other. Ginny Joe, hey, you could blow him away. The priest, well, he always worked on Sundays. So all people were given these nicknames. And this guy managed to call out 50 names by nicknames. But one of the better ones was the Olympic Flame. Yeah, he never goes out, you know, so... All these nicknames. They're very, very Ringsend, a very, very traditional thing on the docks, and particularly in Ringsend.
So good. And I need to read this carefully, but somebody sent in a message about Malapropisms. I'm originally says this guy Desmond from the Coombe. And back in the day, if my mam had something like a nice cream cake, she would say, that was gucking forges. Good luck to the lads with their play. It's a great part of your history in Dublin's first city. I could talk to you all day, Gary. It's been a real privilege and pleasure. Thank you for coming in. And just to say, your play, Dockers, previews on the 8th of April. It runs the 12th of April in the Ambassador Theatre in O'Connell Street in Dublin. All tickets on ticketmaster.ie. And I'll bring you two more messages. Anne says, I saw Dockers in Liberty Hall last year. Absolutely brilliant play and two great leads. And Eugene Gilley says, Miriam, I remember the Brown family and the waking up to the news about Jimmy Brown. That's your dad.
Yeah, yeah.
We lived next door to Gary's auntie Maureen when they came into our house really early in the morning to tell my mum and dad the news. We got to know Anna and the Browns over the years after. Great to hear, Gary. And that's Eugene Gillies.
Yeah, I remember Eugene. How are you doing, Eugene? Haven't seen you in a long time.
Isn't that so lovely?
Yeah,
it's the joy
lovely.
Of...
That's fantastic.
It's beautiful.
Yeah.
Anyway, Gary, your dad's smiling down at you and your mum. Thanks for being my guest
Not
this morning.
Thank
Mind
you
yourself,
much,
we'll take a break.